Welcome to another episode of the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Han, and one of the major issues in the Brexit negotiations and one of the three matters to be put on the table this far has been citizens' rights. But too often, both the media and politicians talk predominantly about EU citizens living in the UK rather than looking at it the other way around and look at the fate of Brits living abroad. So for today's episode, we brought on Karen O'Reilly, who's a sociologist and research fellow at Goldsmiths University of London, to shed some light on this side of the coin. She is part of the Brexpaths project, which examines freedom of movement, citizenship and Brexit in the lives of Britons resident in the EU. We already talked to Karen's colleague Mikkela for episode 89 back in July, if you remember. Here we talked about sort of the initial opinions of Brits in France specifically. But we thought it was time to check in with the project and talk a bit about how expats are feeling about the state of the negotiations thus far, how they've progressed, and what, to them, would be the ideal outcome. So stay tuned to find out about what Karen discovered on her field trip to Spain. And while you're here, please do subscribe to us wherever you're listening and let us know your thoughts on this or any other episode. We're at Brexit Podcast everywhere or at brexitpodcast.com. So Karen, you've just gotten back from your first fieldwork trip to Spain for the Brexpaths project. How did that go?
So yeah, just got back about a couple of weeks ago. The idea was to go for 2.5 weeks to meet people, make some appointments, maybe have a few interviews while we were there, and then go back and going back for a month in January. The intention was then to do lots and lots of interviews then. As it turned out, exactly as happened with Mikkela, who I know you've spoken to on another podcast, it went crazy. We had so many people that wanted to talk to me. I keep saying we because my husband travels with me. He's often travelled with me on my trips to Spain many times in the past for research. But I'm the one who does the research. So, masses of people were coming forward. Through email, through Twitter. I do have quite a lot of contacts in Spain because I've been, you know, many, many times in the past to that area in the Costa del Sol. But the passion around Brexit just sort of blew me away, really.
I'm quite interested in that, really, because I sort of assumed that maybe since Mikkela did her research back in summer, that by now people would have maybe, you know, gotten tired of talking about it, or maybe got sort of just disillusioned about being able to change anything because the process has been going on for so long. But it's really encouraging to know that people are still really engaged in the topic, I suppose.
Well, you know, this is people's everyday lives, people who are living abroad. It's not something they can just sort of forget about and just say, let's think about this when it happens. They have to make decisions now. And you know, it's affecting their lives right now. It's affecting their lives in terms of finances. So depending on when they moved to Spain, how much they were getting for their pound then compared with now, some of them have seen like up to a 25% cut in the income they're living on since Brexit. Now, of course, we don't know whether that's caused by Brexit or not. We can't know that. But they still, you know, it's still linked to Brexit in as much as since Brexit, I've had this change in my income. I mean, just masses and masses of changes in their lives that they're having to think about right now. But I also, hopefully, when we get chance, because I'd like to tell you about all those different things that are affecting people, but also remind me to come back and also tell you the bits that they talk about that isn't just about themselves, that they're also passionate about.
Well, feel free to talk about that now, really, if you'd like.
Yeah, but remind me then to come back to the real issues that are affecting them. But I guess this is kind of a double-edged sword, I suppose. In as much as, yeah, there are masses of actual, you know, specific things that people are having to deal with. We'll come back to that. But there are those I spoke to who, you know, probably would have. I don't ask people whether they voted or not. If they volunteer, that's up to them. And I don't ask them what they voted because that's up to them to tell me that or not. And I don't want to put people in a kind of one camp or another. And one thing I'm finding is that people aren't necessarily that straightforwardly in one camp or another. But as they start talking, and then when, you know, there are those who are fairly laid back about Brexit and the effects it will have in the UK, not particularly worried for themselves or those who are opposed to Brexit, but nevertheless not particularly worried for themselves because financially they'll be okay and they can work it out. But still, some of those are still incredibly passionate about those who are opposed to Brexit are still incredibly passionate about the effect it's having in Britain and how it makes them feel about themselves. And they were saying things like, you know, I'm having to decide, do I want to be British or do I want to be European? So, for example, in Spain, it's not the same, it varies around Europe, but in Spain at the moment, if you decide to have Spanish citizenship, you can't also have British citizenship. So you have to give up your Spanish citizenship. So people are saying, you know, so if I decide to have Spanish citizenship, then I have to prove myself worthy of a citizenship somewhere, where before I already had European citizenship and nobody asked me to prove I was worthy of that. So I have to learn the language well enough and I have to learn some, you know, about the culture well enough to prove that I'm allowed to be a citizen. And then I have to give up citizenship of where I was born or where I just took for granted I was from. And, you know, very often, I mean, this cuts to the heart of how people feel about themselves and how they see themselves. And very often they hadn't even thought about that before. I said to them, you know, would you have called yourself British before or European before? And they said, so many times, well, I didn't really even think about it. And I think this is something, one of the reasons, one of the many reasons that people are so passionate about this, is that they're really having to think fundamentally about who they are.
So do you think that that's sort of a negative side effect, or is that in a way, do you think that kind of reflection can be sort of a good thing in that it encourages people to look at how, you know, insignificant things like that really are when you think about it, that your citizenship doesn't really determine who you are, I suppose?
That would be a nice outcome. And, you know, as a sociologist, I can tell you that nationality is a social construct, that exactly as you say, that in a way, it's kind of made up. We all have very mixed up histories and we could have come from anywhere. And some interesting things are happening with people digging into their past and finding out that they've got Spanish grandparents or something, or great grandparents, or, you know, German heritage somewhere back. So that, yeah, that's a really positive thing. And people are also speaking in incredibly positive ways about Europe, that most research that had been done in the past on British people about Europe showed that they weren't, that they felt European second and British first. I'm now not sure whether that research was done in the way that it could have been, because I think if people are being asked in slightly different ways, think about Europe and what does Europe mean to you, rather than choose a category, I think people would, they're telling me now that they would have already sort of thought that they were European and all it, but they didn't express it in that way. So I suppose in a way it's a positive thing that they're now expressing that they're not sure who they are, and they're partly British, or some say, well, I don't have any feelings for Britain anymore. But really strong, passionate feelings very often coming out about Europe. But of course, that would be would be a positive thing if it wasn't that they were suddenly having to decide. And they really feel, you know, another thing that came out over and over again, these words resentful, disappointed, that they're resentful that they're being made to leave Europe, to not be European anymore. They're disappointed that people have often made this decision for them, because don't forget, anyone who's been abroad for 15 years or more was not even allowed to vote. And they're very angry about that, that they've decisions have been made on their behalf that they weren't even allowed to take part in.
So, as you mentioned earlier, you've visited Spain sort of at varying points throughout your life, for example, for the book The British on the Costa del Sol. And I'm curious what, apart from this issue of sort of national belonging, what change you've seen in the people that are living there since the referendum and up until now?
I must admit that's a difficult one, because the research I've done in the past was deeply ethnographic. So the first time I went to Spain, it was living there for 15 months with my partner, with my children. My children went to Spanish school. You know, we lived as British people abroad. We eventually bought a house there. We've spent many months of each year for several years going back there. So I was able then to get to know people from all sorts of different walks of life. And I would have said then, or did say then, that a lot of things about that people want to try to integrate but weren't finding it very easy, that they're very supportive of each other, that they recreate a little bit of Britain in the past, but it's not that simple that they're living in a little bit Britain in the past, because they also really love Spain. So the way they live is to kind of mix it up and make a little mixture of Spain and Britain. The passion for Spain has always been very, very strong. It's not just about living somewhere in the sun, and it doesn't matter where for most people. Most of them do try to learn the language, but find it difficult to stick with it because there are so many other British and so many Spanish people will speak a little bit of English. So some fascinating sociological themes about ethnicity and how it was difficult to feel Spanish. But of course, this recent research was being more interview-based, and then you're not able to get such a broad, in 2.5 weeks, I'm not going to tell you I've got a feel for how things have changed, except that, of course, I have done more recent research as well as this about British people, and I am finding that there are now those who have really settled, have really put down deep roots. I'm meeting more people who are fluent in Spanish, who are elected councillors, who have got children who've been to Spanish school, who now don't intend to live anywhere else. What I've called it is sedimentation. You see a lot of sedimentation. So it's been interesting that people, sociologists have written about what we call lifestyle migrants, people who move for lifestyle more than for financial reasons, as if they're very mobile and they just go wherever they want to be, whatever works for them at the time. But I would argue that there really has been, it's not that fluid, that there really has been some putting down of deep roots. I mean, this one couple we know, we've known them since we've been going out to Spain, and they're now in their late 80s, and they've been living there 30, 40 years. And the husband sadly died. We went to his funeral. And the wife, she has no intention of going back to the UK. Spain is her home now.
It's kind of interesting in a way that the exact time when people were starting to settle down, that sort of, as you mentioned, sedimentation state, would coincide exactly with the time that the rest of the UK decides to sever its ties with the EU.
I mean, it's not exactly, of course, because this has been a very slow, long process. So it looks exactly, because I did research last year and wrote a paper about this idea of sedimentation. And then we've done this research. But, of course, these are really long, drawn-out processes. Mm. And people tell me there are still the people who are going out to Spain, in recent years, and since Brexit. People have moved there since Brexit just to give it a go. So, there are still those people who are just still going out, opening a bar. Never run a bar before, but I'll open a bar and see how it goes. So there are still those people who are doing that and who aren't learning an awful lot of Spanish and just sort of, I'll just see how it is and see what it's like. So probably, very different types, in all honesty.
So as we talked about earlier, your research partner, Michaela, already went to France to sort of talk to the expats there. And you can listen back to our episode with that over on the website. But I'm curious to hear from you what some of the differences and common factors are in sort of what people were concerned about, how Brexit was affecting them this far.
Well, I want to take the opportunity to say that some people are not worried at all. And interestingly, they also volunteered to take part in the project. Not many, but some. But they wanted to say, don't present us all as if we're all moaning and groaning, and this is dreadful for all of us. So, there were those who spoke to me and said, everything will be fine. This will be resolved. That will be resolved. I'm sure it'll be fine. There's nothing more to say. However, you know, that was being completely balanced. No, the balance was tipped much more in the other way by, you know, the number of people coming forward to say, I just need to talk to you. I want to talk to you. And every time I talk to somebody, and I've done some Skype interviews since I was there as well, because I couldn't fit everyone in. There's something new comes up that you think, my goodness, I hadn't thought of that. So I'll just run through a few things that I've ended up writing down, because the list is just getting longer and longer, and I still won't touch on all the things. So they don't know whether, not everyone knows whether they're going to be able to even stay in Spain or not, because it depends when, who they say can stay and who doesn't. So whether it means that you need to be on the padrón, on the council registers, or whether you have to have a residence permit. If they're going to say you need a residence permit, are they going to say you need to have had it by a certain amount of time? Or are they going to say, it doesn't matter, if you've got a residence permit yesterday, then that's fine. What is the cut-off date going to be? So we don't know what that, so, you know, if it's going to be, as long as you've had a, and this works the other way as well, for Europeans in the UK, they say anyone here can stay, but anyone here since when? From when? How do we know that they're here? They want to know about the tax implications, and this is quite a big one, because there are tax implications, and this is, you know, for the whole of Europe, the tax implications differ for the 27 countries. Inheritance issues. I spoke to a woman a couple of days ago. She's 86 years old. She's been in Spain since the 1970s. I mean, this is her home. This is a woman who's, you know, getting old and wants to stay in her home. But she's worried that if she decides to stay, she won't be able to leave her home to her children. Now, I don't know, you know, these issues are very complicated. She could probably get legal advice and she could probably find out that it will be okay. But the point is that people are so unsure and so confused and frightened. They're worried about health entitlements, you know, whether or not they'll continue to get health cover. So anyone who's retired is entitled to reciprocal arrangements from the UK. Probably we think that they're going to continue, but it does go back to that first issue I mentioned. When are they going to have the cut-off and who are they going to include? Do you have to have a residence permit? How long do you have to have it for? There are also a whole group of other people who are younger than retirement age who have had an agreement, so maybe a partner is retirement age, or very close to retirement age, and the UK has agreed for them to have reciprocal benefits. They don't know whether they will continue. So I spoke to a man who is looking after his wife who has multiple sclerosis. He gets carer's allowance to look after her. He doesn't know whether that's going to continue. So he's really frightened because they can't afford to go back to the UK.
So who do they receive that from, the UK government or the Spanish government?
They receive it from the Spanish government, but government's paying for it. So they're covering it. So it's this reciprocal agreement, so that the British agree to cover certain things. So you have to resolve it with your own government, but they can't get a straight answer yet. So I'll just run, I mean, I could talk for ages and ages, but I'll just run more quickly. You know, so it's, will benefits continue? Will carers' allowance continue? Will other people be able to continue to move? So think of a couple. So I spoke to a gay couple who've moved out in the last year because they were planning to move anyway. And they said, you know, we're going to carry on doing it. We're going to still do it. They adopted a young man who was 17. He's now 19. They said he's not really old enough for us to just leave, but we thought he was fine and he could come and join us at any time. And now we don't know if he will be able to. So do you know what I mean? Will they have the right to work? Will they need to prove that they translate their professional qualifications? Will they still have voting rights? Will they still be able to stand in elections? There, that just gives you an example of some of the things that, you know, I have friends who say to me, you know, how are you doing? Why are you doing this research? Surely it's all going to be fine. And then I start ranting like I just did to you.
So was there a story that sort of stuck with you most? One that was really touching in a way, or really surprising, that you still think about now?
I suppose I've probably mentioned them, but there are three that really stay with me now. One is the man who said, everything's fine and I'll be fine. And it stayed with me because he was quite unusual. To be honest, it's because he has enough money. He will be fine because he has enough money. And, you know, we have to be careful to acknowledge that there are people who have enough money and they will be fine. You know, they can either afford, they've probably got property in the UK as well, and so they can decide where they're going to live. And so I think it's important to say that there are those who will be fine, but it's very dangerous to think, well, that's okay for everyone, because if those people are getting the message out, we ignore the others. But the 86-year-old woman who, you know, she's living with her daughter who works part-time and looks after her. And I felt very sad when they said, you know, I think we've decided to go home. And I said, well, they said, well, not home. That's the wrong word. We shouldn't be calling it home. It's not home. We've lived here this many years. And I couldn't really understand why they decided to go, except that one of the things they mentioned that they were afraid of was that they said, we don't know if we make this decision to stay here, whether in the future Spain will then leave the EU and then people will turn against us. So all sorts of weird things are coming up in people's minds that, you know, may or may not happen in the future, but are affecting people now and making them having to think about what to do now. And people are saying, you know, I don't know whether I'm going to have this third child. You know, another couple, we're deciding to have a child. We've decided to put off having a child because we're not sure yet what we're going to do. You know, really profound things in people's lives.
Yeah, that's the thing about uncertainty, isn't it? Nothing's really happening, but the fact that nothing's happening in itself is having such a massive and very real effect on people's lives.
I think, you know, that would be my take-home message, actually. If I just wanted to focus on one thing, it's that, you know, people can't just carry on living their lives not knowing. They have to decide. They have to make decisions. You know, do I work on my garden? Do I sell my house? Do I take out Spanish citizenship and give up British citizenship? Do I have that child I was planning? Do I go home and sell everything up and lose money? Because obviously, you know, it's had taken a hit on property prices as well. Can I go home? Of course, there are those who can't afford to even make that decision to go home.
So have people mentioned to you, obviously the negotiations over citizens' rights have been sort of ongoing because they were one of the first issues that are being discussed between the EU and the UK currently. Are people keeping up with the negotiations? Are they very well informed on it? Or
I have to say, there are some marvellous campaign groups. There's a very big one called Remain in Spain, and lots of people are members of that, and so that they can keep up to date with what's happening. Of course, another huge change, you asked me what had changed, is that most people now are on email or Twitter or Facebook or something, which, of course, when I first went to Spain, they didn't have that. So they had this connectivity with each other. And so I think, generally speaking, they are quite good at keeping up to date. I mean, I went to a couple of council meetings in Mijas, and they're absolutely marvellous. They are really keeping up to date. They're telling people, you know, they're having meetings. They're telling people when anything comes out, they'll let them know. They'll be publishing leaflets and so on and so on. Then, you know, the very next council in Fuengirola next door, really not doing anything very much at all. So, you know, people are having to put the effort in themselves to find out, but they can find out. And we're also trying to do that ourselves. Whenever we find anything out ourselves, we're putting it on our Facebook and Twitter feed as well. The consulates around Europe are holding meetings every now and then. It seems a bit ad hoc. It doesn't seem to be very clear and systematic. Some are and some aren't. I went to a meeting and the British consul was there. And the meeting was for another purpose, but they said, obviously, while you're here, because it was mainly British people in the room, you would like me to talk about Brexit. She started by saying, of course, I'm sure you're all sick to death of talking about Brexit, so you won't want me to talk about it, which, of course, got people going, and then proceeded to say, you know, we're negotiating, we think that, you know, generally people who are retired will be fine, and generally people who have got their papers in order will be fine. But nothing, and then she finished with, I haven't got the exact quote, but something like, but nothing is certain until it's all decided.
Well, that's helpful.
Exactly. And then we had coffee afterwards, and people did want to talk about Brexit, but she'd managed very cleverly to set up the meeting as if, of course, you don't want to talk about Brexit. You know, you close people down. And I've spoken to other people, and they've said whenever they've spoken to their consul, it's been platitudes, really. You know, we're doing the best we can, we've got your best interest at heart, but it's missing the point of these little details. You know, and then in the very same meeting, because the meeting was included some councillors from the Foreign Residence Department, two people asked whether they should get residence permits or not. Now, I was breathtaken, because the answer from the council was, have a think about whether you want to still use the NHS in the UK or whether you want to transfer to using the NHS, to the National Health Service in Spain, or whether you want your tax to be domiciled in the UK or Spain. So they're still giving them mixed messages. They're still having to decide, not, well, if you've got all your papers in order and you have a residence permit, at least you then stand a chance of being told, because I suspect anyone without a residence permit will not be allowed to stay. I suspect. I don't know. And those figures of 308,000 people living in Spain at the moment, they are taken from the council registers, not from residence permits. And I don't think that that will be the council registers that are used to decide whether you can stay or not. I might be wrong. I don't know. And anyway, most people I speak to who work with British people abroad, you know, in campaign groups or support groups or councillors, most of them estimate probably 2 in 3 people don't put their names on the register anyway. So, you know, there could be, you know, 1.5 million Brits in Spain, and many of them not entitled to stay.
So how do you personally feel that the negotiations have been going this far in regards to citizens' rights?
Really worries me is that they're being put together all the time with EU citizens in Europe, in the UK, which is, it kind of makes sense. We're talking about the rights of citizens, and we'll put them together. But while the UK continues to put them together, they seem to me to be using them as a bargaining chip, because, you know, we don't want to conclude anything too much about any of them, because once we do, then we've concluded for all of them and sort of committed to all sorts of costs. So, I mean, there are things like commitments, like, you know, everyone who's, all EU citizens who are staying here will be allowed to remain. But they're not clear about, you know, again, how we'll decide who is a EU citizen who's living here. Will it be part-time? Will it be their partners? Will it be their children? What's the cut-off date going to be? Will it be people who've been here by a certain amount of time? So they're not saying those things. So I do think it's very frustrating. Then the decisions aren't being made, and it seems to me, I mean, the UK government has recently updated its webpage with what could look like quite a lot of securities assurances. But then when you read between the lines, it says things like, we seek to, we hope to, we intend to, not, we definitely will make sure that you have this. We definitely will make sure that, you know. So it's exactly as the consul said, nothing is certain until it's all agreed.
So from what you've heard from people in Spain, what do you think the best possible deal would be, and how likely do you think this is of actually happening?
Do you know, you asked me that one before, and you kindly gave me some time to think about it. And that was, I was just really lost, because I thought, I'm not really sure how this can be right for a lot of people I've spoken to. But at least give people some clarity about, we're going to use residence permit or you know, being registered on the council register, you know, what they have to do to prove that they legally live somewhere else. At least tell them that. And, you know, what the cut-off date will be. And what benefits will still apply and what benefits won't apply. And then, you know, beyond that, they still need more than that, really, because they, you know, need some fighting to try to get dual citizenship across the whole of Europe, because it seems such a shame. There are some campaigns, apparently, to push for dual citizenship in Spain, but we don't know what's going to happen with that. So, yes, just some assurances, more than is written. I mean, I think what, you know, there will be things that they can say for definite, and they could say those things for definite. You know, like, if you have a residence permit and you've had your residence permit for this amount of time, we will make sure. Even the foreign minister, the Spanish foreign minister, the Spanish are being very, very kind and reassuring, and Spanish people, I hear, are being very kind. Well, you'll be fine, we'll look after you. And Alfonso Dastis, the foreign minister, said on the Andrew Marr show a few weeks ago that they fully intend that the lives of British in Spain will not be disrupted, which was great and reassuring, but again a platitude, because there's nothing concrete behind it. Because who? What do you have to prove you live there? And do you mean children? Do you mean, you know, children who don't live with you yet? Do you mean your German partner? Well, that German, you know, people are married to Germans and Italians and things like that, and don't know whether if they move back to the UK they'll be allowed to go with them. It's a mess.
And to add yet another uncertainty, negotiations are sort of stalling at the moment, obviously, with the EU saying it's not confident that we can move on to the next stage of negotiations in December, because they think not really enough progress has been made on issues like the UK-Ireland border, citizens' rights, obviously, and the financial settlement. And then there was that wonderful letter from Boris Johnson and Michael Gove to Theresa May, pushing sort of for preparing for a no-deal scenario and keeping the transition period to a maximum of 2 years, which really means that there's a risk that we might get the no-deal scenario that Theresa May has been talking about. What will that mean for the lives of these people?
Well, it will be an absolute mess, because every single thing, every single agreement across the whole of Europe, so every agreement between Britain and Spain, Britain and Germany, Britain and Italy, Britain, etc., 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 times 27, will have to be discussed. So, you know, at that moment, they will have to say, well, are you going to carry on paying this? Are you going to carry on paying this? Is this person allowed to come home? Is this person not allowed? Is this person allowed to stay? Can their German partner join them? Can they? Who's going to pay what tax where? Who's going to pay what benefits where? Who's going to be allowed to move where? Are they going to be allowed to use their e-hit? Can they continue working? Can we still recognise their professional qualifications? Are they still going to have the right to vote? And this will have to be agreed at least in the interim for every single country. Can you just imagine what that will be like? You'll need an army of lawyers.
Even more than already currently. So that's quite a lot of lawyers.
It just does not bear thinking about. And I actually do worry about people's mental health at the moment.
What did you see any signs of people struggling with their mental health because of this?
It's not my field, it's not my expertise, so I can't really talk about that. But it's just, you know, I talk to people. I mean, I'm sure you spoke to Mikla as well about her research in France, and the level of emotion when people are talking to is something I have never experienced before. I mean, the number of times people cry when they're talking to us, it does worry me. And, you know, and I've had interviews when I've been close to tears as well. I the number of interviews with silences in them, because the silence is the most, I always say it's the most profound interview quote is the silence, because people just don't know what to say. They just look at you and they just don't know what to say. Because, you know, these are things that are very important in people's lives.
Yeah.
Where they live, whether they can feel European, whether they can feel British, what they'll do in the future. things. It's not just all about money and health entitlements and benefits, but of course those are important as well.
Well, Karen, thank you so much again for joining us. It's been really great.
Okay, thank you very much.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks as always for tuning in, and there are new episodes of the podcast every Tuesday and Thursday, so if you want to get those and stay up to date on all the Brexit news and opinions of the day, please do subscribe to us wherever you're listening right now, and that way you can get them sent straight to your phone. You can also find us pretty much anywhere at Brexit Podcast, and the show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, Ollie Dagmar and Warren Paul, with a theme song by Kevin MacLeod.